when I was in the pulpit a couple weeks ago, I mentioned to you all that I found Unitarian Universalism by accident when I was in college. What I didn't mention was that I had been active in on-campus fundamentalist Christian groups prior to my stumbling upon Unitarian Universalism. I told you last time that I had always been drawn to church, and since I grew up in Texas, those churches were more often than not Southern Baptist. And when I was in college, I joined groups like Campus Crusade for Christ, and then a Christian sorority called Eta Iota Sigma. I kid you not, we were his. The thing about these groups was that they offered a sense of close-knit community, which I loved. They offered a commitment to helping others. They offered emotional and sacred space for singing and prayer and deep connection to something bigger than ourselves. That's why I was a part of those groups. They also offered certainty. That's the thing about fundamentalist faith of any kind. They are very sure of themselves, and they have truth with a capital T. And for a while, that felt good. Who doesn't want certainty sometimes, especially in college when you feel like you don't know what's going on? But as I got a little older and I contemplated my own beliefs, I became more and more disenchanted with that particular brand of Christianity. I just didn't believe it anymore. But since I loved church, I didn't have anywhere to go. One day, I was procrastinating from writing a term paper, and I was checking my email, and I got some spam email with an embedded quiz inside saying, "What religion are you?" Which, of course, piqued my interest, and I took the quiz. Some of you might have taken the quiz yourselves. It's called Belief-O-Matic. And it's from a website called beliefnet.com. Has anyone taken it? Yeah? See? It asks all kinds of questions about what you believe about God and Jesus, death, life, and all your values. Now, I had been taught by these fundamentalist Christian groups that I was a part of that there was a correct answer to these questions. And while I knew in my mind what those answers were, I decided to take the test honestly and answer the way I really believed, not just the way I thought I was supposed to. I remember worrying that I would die someday, and I would be standing at the pearly gates of heaven, and St. Peter would pull out my Belief-O-Matic quiz results from some heavenly file drawer, and that would be it. It would be the proof that I didn't believe as I should. I remember kind of looking over my shoulder as I took this test. That is the fear that gets instilled with that kind of certainty. But I forged ahead when I clicked Submit Answers, and it said I was 100% Unitarian Universalist. I didn't even know what that meant. And I eventually ended up on UUA.org, and it was a question and answer page, and I remember crying with relief. Yes, this is what I believe. There are other people out there with similar questions and doubts. They also want to be a part of a community of love and meaning-making, where they sing and practice generosity to each other and their world. I want that. And so I began attending the First Unitarian Society of Dallas, and I was hooked. These were my people. I was drawn to the slogan. We were big on slogans in the early 2000s. Many beliefs, one religion. And I was attracted to the fact that they called their RE program religious exploration because they allowed the children to explore their beliefs. I love that the minister would start her prayers with, "God of many names whose mystery is beyond all our naming." They were admitting they didn't know God's name. That felt like humility to me, and I appreciated it so much after the certainty that I had been asked to swallow for a while. I started to notice something, though, and it really bugged me. It was that the pulpit was off-center on the stage, the chancel. And then I noticed that the chalice was also off-center, and that there was no central image of a cross or anything up there to look at. And then anywhere I went, when I visited Unitarian Universalist congregations, I noticed the same thing, nothing in the center. And then I realized that the chalice is itself off-center. Now, the traditional image of the flaming chalice, if you look at the gray hymnal, the cover, is the flaming chalice within two interlocking rings, but it's off-center inside those rings. You can find that if you look there or on some of our other imagery. Now, I struggle, and this is honest, I struggle with some obsessive-compulsive tendencies. And for me, a need for symmetry and order is how those tendencies get manifested. And it started to really, really annoy me that nothing was in the middle. And now here at the fellowship, we have our flaming chalice here, but we have another one in this room, a really big one. Do you know where it is? There. The flame is the window at the top, and the way these two walls curve down and open at the bottom is the cup of the chalice. Now, I didn't see it either at first, so don't feel bad if you haven't seen it. My husband actually had to point it out to me, some Unitarian Universalist I am. And it is also off-center. So this really bugged me until I learned the history of that off-center symbol. So here it is. The Unitarians and the Universalists were two separate denominations until they came together in 1961 to create this new Unitarian Universalist tradition. They were, prior to that, both independently Christian denominations, even though theirs was a brand of Christianity that my fundamentalist friends in college would not have identified as Christian. Unitarians did not believe that Jesus was God. They believed Jesus to be a great moral teacher, perhaps God-like, but not God. Universalists were different. They did believe that Jesus was God, but they believed that the death of Jesus was a salvationary act for everyone. Everyone was saved, no matter what they believed about him and no matter how they lived their lives. Universalists gave us the idea of original blessing instead of original sin, that we are all born blessed, not stained, and that we do not need to fear for anyone's soul because we're all saved anyway. Universalism had quite a focus on this worldly faith, lived faith, justice work, because after all, hell might not exist in the afterlife, but we know that it can exist here on earth for those suffering injustice, poverty, war, or illness. They believed in a God so loving that no one would be damned to hell. And so we carry with us their central tenet of love in our modern day version of Universalism. But in the 1940s and 50s, this was before the two came together, there was a group of Universalist clergy. These were young whippersnappers, recent graduates from seminary. And they formed a group, and they wanted to shake up their Universalist faith tradition. They called themselves the Humiliati. Sounds Latin and cool. They felt their faith had grown stale. They ruffled some feathers in the denomination when they refused to be ordained to the Christian church and instead insisted on being ordained to the Universalist church. And to top it off, they created their own symbol. Can we put that symbol up? They put a cross in a circle, but they put the cross off center to symbolize the fact that the cross was still important to their faith, but it was no longer the center. They wanted a faith that widened its perspective beyond Christianity while still including it. They started adding elements to worship, like readings from other faiths, or secular sources, or science. Ooh. If salvation was universal, they wanted a faith that was more universal too. Meanwhile, the Unitarians, who themselves had been doing a fair bit of evolving themselves, they'd been heavily influenced by the Transcendentalists in the 1800s and the Humanists at the turn of the century, who believed that God was not even necessary to live a good or moral life. The Unitarians had their own symbol, which was originally only used by the Unitarian Service Committee, which is a very small group of people, two, really, who worked during World War II to save people, including many children, from Nazi-occupied Czechoslovakia. The symbol that they used, which later came to be used by Unitarians more widely, was the flaming chalice. So that was their symbol. And so when the Unitarians and the Universalists came together, they created a new symbol. They took the flaming chalice of the Unitarians and they placed it within two circles to symbolize the coming together and interconnection of the two faiths. I think about it kind of like MasterCard. And then they placed the chalice inside those circles, but they placed it off center. Can you show us that one? Like the Humiliati's Universalist off-center cross. Oh, man, that made me feel so much better. It's on purpose. It's a recognition that we are placing our beliefs as important in our vision, but also remaining open to new truths as they are revealed to us. We are not so convinced of our truth with a capital T that we can't be moved to learn and grow or change our minds. Now, some have called Unitarian Universalism a donut religion, that we have no center theologically, that there's a hole in the middle. But I would argue that we absolutely do have a center. Now, our seven principles are not a belief statement, but they capture well what we aspire to. And if you line up our seven principles in a row, and then you bend them like an archway, next slide, the first and the seventh principles are the pillars on which the others stand. Those are the two principles that most of us, if you know your principles at all, know those two. We can usually pull the first and the seventh out pretty easily. Those are the inherent worth and dignity of all people and the respect for the interdependent web of existence of which we are a part. But the fourth principle, which often gets lost, it's in the middle there, the fourth principle is the keystone of the archway. It is literally the center of our seven principles, and it, I would argue, is what makes us Unitarian Universalists. Our fourth principle says that we promote the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. The free and responsible search. So that means that we agree, when we become part of these communities of faith, to undertake a lifelong quest to find what is true and right, and to continue being open to new learning and new insights. It means that we will not stop in the middle of our faith journey when we find something we like, plop down on our behinds, and stay there forever, refusing to budge. But this is absolutely crucial. Our fourth principle is not a free pass. It does not mean we believe nothing. Nothing drives me up the wall faster than when people say, "Oh, I love being UU. I can believe whatever I want." Or, "I know about you UUs. You guys don't believe anything, right?" No! Please, please don't say that. Our fourth principle is not a gaping hole in the middle of our theology. The fourth principle is not a belief. It is a theological stance. It's a process that we hold sacred. No, you cannot believe whatever you want here. There are a lot of things that I want to believe, but the fourth principle says that I must adhere to a responsible search. To keep my mind open, I listen to others. I seek inside myself for my own personal experience. I read, I pray, and I come to conclusions about what I believe to be true and meaningful. And more often than not, those conclusions are uncomfortable. Those truths are not what I want to believe, but they are what I am called to believe because I have been open to the search. For example, the deep, important, and often uncomfortable work of uncovering white supremacy within myself and our faith, which I don't want to believe, but I understand so much better now because I have strived to remain open to the voices of people who are more affected, the voices of people of color who are leading and changing our world and our faith for the better. And so please, I'm just going to say it right now. Please don't tell people you go to the UU Fellowship and it's great because you can believe whatever you want. Tell them that you go to the UU Fellowship and it's a place where we strive to discover together what is true and meaningful, even as we learn and grow. This misunderstanding about openness and open-mindedness has become abundantly clear in the recent rise in visible white supremacist hate groups in our country, most notably the white supremacist rally that took place in Charlottesville a few weeks ago. It brought hate out from under the rug where it had always been all along, but it allowed it to be visible. And thankfully, there were many people on the side of love and anti-racism who stood and sang and marched and fought against those marching for hate. Heather Heyer, one of the protesters against the marchers, was tragically killed, and others were injured when a car plowed into their group. Those white supremacists, they might not all be the same religion, but I assure you that they have a belief system in common, and theirs is not a donut faith. At the center of their belief system is the idea that some people, white, straight, Christian people, are created better, and everyone else, black, brown, red, yellow, lesbian, gay, transgender, genderqueer, Jewish, Muslim, immigrant, everyone else who is not white or straight or Christian is bad. And not only do they believe those others to be bad, but they believe that those people need to be harmed or eliminated. Why? Why do they believe that? It's because theirs is a belief system that there is only so much worth to go around. If other groups have worth and are honored or valued or given rights, then they will lose some of their own worth. That's why those at the rally with their tiki torches were chanting things like, "You will not replace us," and "Jews will not replace us." They fear being replaced. They believe that others must lose in order for them to win. They believe it is a zero-sum game. And heartbreakingly, research shows that most white people feel this way. Now, I'm not saying that all or most white people are Nazis. I'm not saying that. So listen to what I'm saying. In the reading that Margaret read for us earlier, we heard the president of the Southern Poverty Law Center quote a study done by Harvard researchers saying that white people see racism as a zero-sum game, meaning that gains for African Americans come at their own expense. But black people see it differently. From their point of view, the rights pie can get bigger for everyone. And it is a core theological truth for Unitarian Universalists, for us, that we know that the rights pie can get bigger for everyone. That is what our first UU principle speaks to, loud and clear, the inherent worth and dignity of everyone. We are the spiritual descendants of the universalists who taught us that salvation is universal. It it's important to remember that the Universalists emerged in a time when the religious landscape in England and the United States was dominated by Calvinist or Presbyterian theology. They had the idea that there were only a limited number of places available in heaven. That was the predominant belief in the English-speaking world, so that we all had to work really hard to get into those limited places. That's one of the primary origins of the Protestant work ethic. But ours is a theology that says, no, God's love is big enough for everyone. There is enough love, enough grace, and more than enough worth to go around. It's not a scarce commodity. Salvation is not a zero-sum game. And that is a distinct difference between our belief system and the narrow-minded and hateful beliefs of those who are marching with torches in Charlottesville. We are called to love our neighbor, but we are not called to affirm or honor their point of view if it flies in the face of what we know to be true and right. Liberals, us, we've historically strived to be neutral as often as possible. We want to give everyone the benefit of the doubt. We worry that in order to be truly open-minded, we need to be open-minded to every possible idea out there. We think that's what it means to have a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And I'm telling you that that is not what our principles call for. We do not have to be open-minded to closed-mindedness. We are not called to tolerate intolerance. Archbishop Desmond Tutu is famous for having said, "If you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor." And Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who white liberals love to quote, especially in terms of his nonviolent resistance tactics, said, quote, "The hottest place in hell is reserved for those who remain neutral in times of great moral conflict." Someone who accepts evil without protesting against it is really cooperating with it. End quote. That's Dr. King. Now, we don't believe in hell, thank you, Universalists, but we should heed Dr. King and Archbishop Tutu in their calls to oppose, actively oppose, injustice. Ours is not a donut faith. Our faith calls us to a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And when people are marching in the streets or posting to social media or talking to you one-on-one claiming that only white lives matter and not other lives, it would be downright irresponsible of us to stand idly by. Our faith calls us to oppose the idea that only some lives matter. Our faith calls us to be clear and firm and bold in claiming that white supremacy is an evil that must be fought against. I'm so grateful for a faith that allows new truths to emerge, to enter into our consciousness, that we are called to remain open, that we're not allowed to sit on our behinds and claim we know once and for all the truth with a capital T. We are allowed, and in fact, we are called to claim our truth as we see it and know it in this time and place. And the truth is, friends, that what we're seeing in our country right now is dangerous. It's not going to go away on its own. This is not a time to ignore injustice. Ours is an off-center faith, a faith that puts the search for truth and meaning at the center, and charges us with freedom and responsibility. Ours is a faith that proclaims the value of every single person, but not every single idea. And we must be brave enough to proclaim our faith loudly and clearly in these trying times, even as we are willing to allow it to grow and change. Amen. Blessed be.